The acclaimed novelist Ann Tyler, who has lived in Baltimore for almost 50 years, has just published a new novel. It chronicles several generations of a family and their quotidian experience, as well as each character's unique relationship to each other, and even to the house in Roland Park, where much of the novel takes place. I'm delighted this morning to have been invited by Ann Tyler to her home, not far from Roland Park, to talk about her latest book. It's her 20th novel. It's called A Spool of Blue Thread. Good morning, Ann. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's good to talk to you.
So let's talk about the Whitshank family. Let's introduce listeners to them. You talk in the novel about several generations of the Whitshanks. Let's talk about the sort of middle generation, Abby and Red. We learn later about their children. We also learn a little bit about, more than a little bit, about some of their parents. But let's talk about Abby and Red Whitshank. Who are they?
Well, I think of them as the center of the current Whitshank family. As you say, they're the middle generation. It's a family of building contractors. They've been building houses in Roland Park and Guilford and Homeland for some 60 years or something like that. And Red and Abby are now, as the novel opens, they're middle-aged and they're thinking about their old age. So that's where I begin the story.
And they have four children, and then another one that sort of makes the scene in the middle of the novel. They sort of pick up another one eventually. Tell us a little bit about some of them.
Well, there is, of course, always the difficult child. One child who's just a bit of an outsider and a bit of a puzzle. And I think of the other three as being unlike each other enough so that I hope readers can tell the difference between them. There is the fourth child is a kind of oddly acquired child, so that makes, I think, an interesting story. I'm always fascinated by families that are makeshift, where you put together something, you adopt, you marry into, you know, something like that. So
one of the things I love so much about this book and all of the other novels of yours that I've read is that every character is likable. These are people that you're rooting for. These are people that you want to see happy and you want to see succeed. And in many cases, they do succeed quite nicely and they are, in fact, happy. Is likability or sort of just general pleasantness in a character something that's important to you or something that you think is good grist for a novelist to imagine their lives with?
I suppose it's not essential for every novelist, but it takes me about 2 years to write a book. So I'm going to have to be living with these people for 2 years, and I just don't want to live with someone I dislike. On the other hand, there have been a few people that maybe haven't behaved well in my novels. In fact, the patriarch of this family is not entirely admirable. But I'm okay with that as long as I find some inner reason for their behavior and begin to sympathize with them.
The other interesting part about this book is that it goes backwards, if you will. Towards the end of the book, we hear about things that happened well before, in the generation before, what we've heard about for the first part of the book. Was that intentional, and did that particular decision to structure it that way, did that pose writerly challenges?
It began that way because I wanted to write a book that I never had to finish. I hate finishing books. I hate the turning in of the book, the editing process, the publicity process, everything like that. So I thought, well, I'm getting on in years. I could just write this book that never ends, and I could do that by having many, many generations. And then my concern was, yes, but eventually I'll run out of generations because, you know, I'll be caught up to date. And I thought, well, not if I go backward in time. So I'll begin with the current generation. I'll move back. And I think the earliest date that I actually show in the book is 1926. And then I suddenly realized that before then, I wasn't that interested in the people, you know. So I stopped the book. I had to end it after all.
And turning in the book really is tough. This is, you create these families, and you get to know them, and you get to be fond of them, and then you've got to let them go. You got to send them up to Knopf in New York and hope they do okay. That hasn't gotten any easier for you, has it, in the 20 novels that you've written?
No, it hasn't. And beyond the idea of saying goodbye to them is the idea, in a way, they've been my imaginary playmates for 2 years. And to expose them to outside eyes and have somebody say something cool about them would hurt my feelings. So, you know, again, it's on their behalf. I think, well, I don't want people to misunderstand them or say anything censorious.
And Tyler, her new book is called A Spool of Blue Thread on 88.1. You're listening to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Another great character in this book is the house in which the Whitshanks live. And I think of it almost as a character in the novel. It passes from generation to generation, and it's a focal point. It's a real fundament of this family. Talk about the importance of place, the importance of the physical location of where people live and how they spend their days.
I think I'm very concerned with place in my books because I don't have much of a sense of place. I wasn't raised in one place or one house. So I very consciously anchor my characters in a place.
And do you think that's a reaction? Is that for lack of a better word, a deficit in your life? I mean, do you regret not having, you know, grown up in the same room as a little girl and then as an adult?
I do. I envy Baltimore people who say that, you know, they know their friends from nursery school.
Mm-hmm. The house is located on, am I pronouncing it right, Boughton Road?
Boughton Road.
Is that a real road in Roland Park?
No. But Boughton was a real person who designed Roland Park.
Right, so he was one of the planners, right? I noticed there was a Boughton Place, but I couldn't find a Boughton Road. So it's a real place, and Roland Park and Homeland and Guilford and this area in North Baltimore is an area that you know well. You've lived in this neck of the woods for a long time. It's a natural instinct to you, I think, to write about this area right around the physical place where you're writing the books rather than to travel too far afield. Why do you think that is?
For one thing, it's a very rich area in terms of texture and, you know, grit. And I'm sort of amused by some of the people who have this very strong sense of the past. And I feel as if sometimes when I'm talking to people, I'm almost on a time machine with them. And then when I think about changing the place, let's say writing about someone in some other town, I just picture this. They'd be in a blank white sheet. They wouldn't have any tapestry around them.
But the tapestry is just something that you know all too well because you're living it every day.
Just raised my children here, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been here for probably soon going to be 50 years.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Junior Whitshank in the novel, Junior and Linnie Mae. Junior is the father of Red, who is married to Abby, and they have the four kids. Junior is almost obsessed with this house that is owned by a family named the Brills. Why is the house so important to Junior, and is the importance to Junior, does that at all reflect its importance to you?
Junior is from a background we don't know at all at first, and it's turns out to be a very iffy background. So to him, the house is a sort of symbol of class, quality. He built it himself, so he knows it's well made, and he just wants to fit in. And one of the things that I say in the book, or have him think in the book, is something I've thought myself, which is we are theoretically a country without class, but somehow there's a bit around the edges that seeps in. So he never really feels that he's made it, but he clings to this house, which is the symbol for him, and which he longs to pass down forever to his family.
And as you read the novel, you feel like you live there, or you feel like you visited there an awful lot, because you really feel like you know this place, and it's a comfortable place. It's a friend's house that you're used to spending a lot of time in. And I think that's a great trick and a great gift as a novelist, to be able to describe a place in a way that is so compelling that you really, you understand it as a reader in a real visceral way. So thank you for that.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Let me do something that's patently unfair, and that is read you a quote that you gave to the New York Times in 1977. And Lord knows I wouldn't want to be reminded of things that I said 30 or 40 years ago. But you said something that struck me. You said, it seems to me that what I'm doing, and this, by the way, was right around the time you were writing your eighth novel. So this is 11 novels ago. And you said, it seems to me what I'm doing is I'm populating a town. Pretty soon it's going to be just full of lots of people that I've made up. And 11 novels later, it is in fact considerably even fuller than it was when you were thinking about that at novel number 8. What do you think of the town so far?
Oh, I'd like to live there. I'm fond of everybody in it. Why wouldn't I? I feel they're alive, to me at least.
Do you have a favorite citizen?
My favorite is Ezra in Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant. He breaks my heart, and I think he's a good man.
When you talk about time as well as place, I found that very poignant. Abby says something to the effect of that when you're young, time goes very slowly, and when you're older, time goes very quickly. And that's something that everybody sort of knows about. But you expand on it beautifully with an observation that I think is quite compelling. You say that we're young for such a fraction of our lives, and we're old for many, many years. So time flies fastest for all those years that we're old. So in a way, it all sort of equals out. It balances out. Those are the kinds of observations and the kinds of insights that I think attract so many millions of people. This town that you've populated over all these years, 10 million books have been sold about the people in those towns. A lot of people are interested in this town and those people. Those observations, is there a way that they come to you? Is there a method? Is there a normal course of events that lead you to have those kinds of understandings and to include them in your books?
When I begin writing, it's so mechanical. I have none of those thoughts. I'm just trying to move my characters around on the page. And there's a moment when they begin taking charge, which I do know how airy-fairy that sounds, but most writers say the same thing. The characters take over. So at that point, for instance, Abby might start talking about time and her view of time. And I'm basically sitting back and saying, well, isn't that interesting? I never thought of that, you know. I have been known to laugh aloud in my writing room when one of my characters comes out with a piece of dialogue. And it's not like laughing at my own joke. It's that they were talking and they said something I never would have thought of. Mm-hmm. So.
Did that take a while to develop that ability to step outside and to really have these people be living, breathing people, characters that you're dealing with, as a separate entity? Did that take a while to learn? I mean, you're on book number 20, and I wonder, is it easier now at number 20 than it was at number 15 or number 10?
I don't know that it's easier, but I have more faith that eventually it will all turn out all right. The first four novels, I certainly did not know how to wait for my characters to take charge, and I'd rather disown those novels if I could. So,
really? You'd like to disown the first four?
I'd like to buy them all up and destroy them.
Mm-hmm. Any chance of that happening?
I guess not.
They are still Ann Tyler novels, and I think there are a bunch of folks who are going to want to read every Ann Tyler novel there is, and it'll include those. Is there such thing as the purpose of a novel, of any of your novels? Is there a purpose? And if there is it to explain the world? Is it to understand the world? Is it to give a contrary view to what others may think the world is? Is there a particular aspiration when one reads this novel or your entire opus? Do you have a particular aspiration as to what you'd like the reader to understand?
No, I'm not writing for them to get any sort of lesson or understanding. I'm, as I say, it begins as such a self-centered process. I'm writing to see what it would feel like to be somebody else. And then when I get it down, I think, so that it feels real to me, then I think I'd like other people to see what it feels like to be that person too. And that's it. I don't care if they take away a moral or a lesson of any sort.
the novelist Ann Tyler. Her new novel is called A Spool of Blue Thread. It's a gem. It's published by Knopf, and we've got a link to more information and more of our conversation on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Ann Tyler, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
Reporting from Baltimore for 88.1, I'm Tom Hall.